Episode number 307, Epic Virtual Choir Videos with Grant Norsworthy. Let's do it.
This is the definitive podcast for helping you plan, create, and execute dynamic worship experiences at your church. Useful, practical content in the areas of production, worship, communications, first impressions, and more. This is Making Sunday Happen.
Hey guys, welcome to Making Sunday Happen. This is episode number 307 of our podcast. Today on the show, I'll welcome Grant Norsworthy. Grant is a worship leader, musician, and Christian music artist currently living in New Zealand. Grant was a member of the Paul Coleman Trio years ago and also served in the band Sonic Flood. Today, he's a worship leader that has a heart to serve and coach others. He travels the world speaking and coaching worship leaders, bands, and musicians through his ministry, More Than Music Mentor. If you are a worship leader, I would love for you to check out Grant's work. We did this interview a few weeks ago, and since then have jumped on Zoom again a few times to talk about what he's doing around the world. He's become a fast friend of mine, and I know that you'll be encouraged by his wisdom and his coaching in today's episode, and with his ministry in general. So be sure to check out Grant's work, More Than Music Mentor. I'll have him on the show back at some point, probably early next year. But this week, we are talking about how to create virtual choir videos. And I know what you might be thinking. Well, wait a second. The pandemic is pretty much over. Why do we need virtual choir videos when I have folks, you know, pretty much back in my church? Because frankly, I believe that we should be ministering to people through physical gatherings as well as digital, both. And the pandemic really just pushed churches that should have been doing digital all along, pushed them to doing digital and being more intentional about that faster, is my opinion. So you should be crafting your experiences and your content to serve those who come into your building and those online. I want to see us do both well, and I know that you do too. So I believe that we should know how to create great digital content, and virtual choir videos are something that you can produce, and it can live online forever. You can share them with your church, with your community, with the world. And Grant and I talked through this question, and I think that you'll find his answer beneficial in your context, wherever you might be with your physical or your digital online worship experiences. Grant was the catalyst for producing a huge virtual choir video for the song The Blessing, using voices from all over New Zealand. He thought it might be just take him a few weeks to put it together. Months later, it was released and really took off. Hundreds of thousands of folks have seen this video online. You might have seen it online as the New Zealand version of The Blessing virtual choir video. So we're going to walk through all the details of how he put that video together, how he gathered the voices and the people, the benefits of virtual choir videos, and more. All that is coming up on today's episode. Also today, I'll introduce a new segment that we'll do once a month or so, with me sharing quick, practical church media tips for your church's media production team. So we'll start that segment today too. All that is on the way. But first, I want to take a minute to thank our sponsors. Now, our podcast is made possible by the generous sponsorship of other companies helping you make Sunday happen. So we would not be able to offer this content to you for free without them. So please, if you would, take a moment and engage with our sponsors and let them know that we sent you. It will really help us continue to reach more pastors, more worship leaders, or tech folks, communications directors, and more with the content that we are providing. So be sure to do that if you would. And here is a quick word from one of our sponsors right now. Check this out. Hey guys, I wanted to let you know about a brand new project that we're a part of. We have teamed up with NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters, to bring you a 10-class course
called Church Media Masterclass. This course will give you practical training as a church tech and communicator and feature incredible content from my friend Phil Cook, yours truly, Dan Darling from NRB, Stephen Brewster, Mark McDonald, Brad Weston from ProPresenter, Nate Anderson from Resi, Jeff Reed from Stadia Church Planning, Josh Brown from His Productions, our creative director Sean Reese, and more. This is conference level content for an extremely low price. I'm talking under $10 per class. Register for the Church Media Masterclass today at churchmediamasterclass.com. That's churchmediamasterclass.com.
Hey guys, today I welcome Grant Norsworthy. Grant is a Grammy-nominated Dove Award-winning artist who has ministered through music, through touring, recording, and more. He's recorded hit songs with the Paul Coleman Trio, as well as Sonic Flood and others. He's now an independent speaker and musician ministering all around the world in the U.S., Australia, New Zealand, wherever God takes him. Grant, thanks so much for hanging out, making the leap internationally here, man. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Carl. Great to be talking to you. Thanks.
Now, did I butcher your name too bad? Give me the official pronunciation.
No, there is no official pronunciation. See, I'm born in Melbourne, Australia, where we really don't know what to do with the letter R.
Okay.
And if you don't know what I'm saying R. Okay.
Oh, I got it now. Boom. Thank you for that.
So I've got two R's in my last name. Norsworthy. That's me overemphasizing the R as I think an American might. Overemphasizing. I get it. I lived in America for 17 years. So I say Norsworthy, you say Norsworthy, and that's totally fine. It's got to be natural for the speaker.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know if there's any point in this interview that I'll need to say it again, but I'm glad if you quiz me at the end, I'll still get it wrong.
Quiz you at the end.
Awesome. Well, hey, man, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, but tell me a little bit about, for those who may not know who you are and what you do, give me a little bit of your journey and what God has done with you over the last few years.
Gosh. Okay. Well, as I've mentioned, born in Melbourne, Australia. And, you know, always been raised in the church, came to faith in Christ quite early, but realized that faith in Christ is not like a switch you throw when you're 14 years old, but it's actually a journey, a process. And so there's been a lot going on ever since then. But to cut a long story short, I wanted to play music professionally and hopefully music that pointed people towards the truth that I understood about God. Joined a band called the Paul Coleman Trio. On the strength of some local success in Australia and New Zealand, the Paul Coleman Trio relocated to Nashville, Tennessee in 2002. We signed to a record label based there, put out some music, had some success. That's where the Grammy nomination and the Dove Award you mentioned came in. By the way, Grammy nomination just means you lost a Grammy. That's what it means.
But it's a pleasure to be nominated, right?
It absolutely is. Yeah, it's one of the high points of that period of my life for sure, professionally anyway. So yeah, played bass guitar with that band, did a lot of touring, got to see the world. And then when that band finished, I want to say that was about 2004, or at least we took a break. My wife, Brooke, and I, we still wanted to be involved in music that was pointing people towards God and the gospel. So we stayed in Nashville and I started playing bass guitar for various artists, and that landed me playing bass guitar in a band that some people remember called Sonic Flood. And they were a hugely successful band before I joined. I joined as they were probably on the tail end of that, which is totally fine. That's how it goes. But still got to play for a lot of bigger audiences, do a lot of traveling, put out some music. And when that period of time finished, and this is around the time Brooke and my first child arrived, Max, who's now 14 years old. So this is very late 2007, early 2008. I hung up my bass guitar and I still play, but not trying to be a career move bass guitarist. I just started presenting myself to the Christian church as a speaker and a teacher. That's where I felt like I could be more effective. And that's what I've been doing ever since. And a big part of that has been what I call More Than Music Mentor, which is providing online and on-site training for the heart and the art of worshiping musicians. Did that in America for 12 years. Then late 2018, my wife and I relocated to be closer to grandparents Here we are now speaking to you from Nelson, New Zealand. It's the top of the South Island, for those who care. It's a long, long way away from the United States, where I guess most of our listeners are. But yeah, Carl, you were mentioning I minister all around the world. With COVID-19, that's only been in New Zealand face-to-face, but I have managed to stay connected through the wonders of the internet, like we are right now with people in the United States and other places in the world.
What are some interesting coaching experiences that you've had? I know you come from a just very interesting background where you have a, you know, worship leading experience and on stage experience, and move into more coaching opportunities. What are some areas that you've gotten to train and coach worship leaders or musicians? What have been some highlights in that?
Well, my passion really is to help the grassroots level instrumentalists, singers, and technicians who are in the trenches in our Christian churches week in, week out. Almost all of them are volunteers. They're not getting paid. Some of them are paid. A few of them are bivocational, but the vast majority of those instrumentalists, singers, and technicians, they're there and volunteering their time. Mm-hmm. And you know, I provide a lot of online videos that help people. A lot of written articles that show up in some of the magazines like Worship Musician Magazine and on my website, grantnorsworthy.com or morethanmusicmentor.com. And, but I love being in the room with people the most. And probably the most encouraging thing for me is to walk people through this arc of a journey, I guess. It's like, well, why do we have music in a church gathering? And realize that a lot of people are very hazy about that. Why? Why is all this effort put into music when people of the Christian faith gather together on Sunday morning or any other time? Pretty much any time we gather, there's music involved. Why is that? And it's sad on one hand, but it's also fascinating to me that so few people really have a good idea of why, apart from because we always have. Because we, right. That's what we do, I guess.
Supposed to
and
it's
do. It's just this like plotted out. But you start talking about that and realize the big reasons why. And by the way, it's more than so people know to come in from the foyer, you know.
Right.
It's more than so the pastor knows, you know, gets to preach to a fuller room because people were late. No, there's really big, important reasons why we sing. And I don't think it's just the instrumentalists and the singers and the technicians who are hazy on this or maybe even forgotten or never knew. I think it's the congregation members as well. And when you remind people of the big, important reasons why we have music, then you see people's level of effort raise. People start bringing their A game. When you let them taste the what I call the higher joy that's possible through music, then people are much more likely to be intentional about personal preparation or making those fine adjustments to their volume levels or tone or their playing that really help. If we know why and then we can define the goal, then we can get a much higher level of engagement from our congregation. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, Carl, but I really feel like a lot of church congregations they're not really sure what to do with this music stuff. We're told we're to worship God now. We're told that these are worship leaders and these are worship songs, but we don't, well, is this like just like a cover band I'm supposed to be in the room with every Sunday, or is there something deeper going on here? And probably the most encouraging things I hear from people is, wow, we applied what you taught us, Grant, and our congregation is singing better, more engaged, more involved, and they're more passionate than we've ever heard before. And that's really affirming for me.
So, what's your why? What do you give them as your why?
Well,
I'm giving away the secret. I don't want to give away the secret sauce.
It's a secret sauce, yeah, man. I've got a top 10 list that I love to teach, and it's my personal top 10 list.
Yeah.
And I think every one of us should have a list, and things like making sure people know to come in from the parking lot is not one of the top 10. You know?
Right.
So it's a list that I maybe we shouldn't go through the whole thing now, but I'll tell you a couple of them. Number 10 is tradition. For 2,000 plus years, people of the Christian faith have gathered together and sung songs together. And we who are involved in this music stuff in the life of the Christian church today, we get to build upon that history. And I mention that one because I think for a lot of people, tradition is their number one. It's on my top 10 list, but it's not number one. It's number 10 for a reason, because we always have is not a good enough reason.
Right.
My number two reason is because the Bible tells us to do this. The Bible clearly teaches, like Ephesians 5:19 tells us, this importance of vertical and horizontal connection that happens when we sing together. And my number one is because God is God and deserves to be praised. And he certainly doesn't deserve near enough is good enough. You know, whatever you do, whether you eat or drink or play an instrument or mix or sing, do it all to the glory of God. This is an important way that we show the worth or worship God. And that's my number one.
Good. Well, I could talk to you all day about that. But one thing I really wanted to... We could go on forever. I really wanted to bring you on because I think you came to prominence a little bit last year in putting together a big epic virtual choir video to the song "The Blessing." I heard about it. Word got around. New Zealand version of "The Blessing," really, really powerful. We're going to put a link here in the podcast and in the show notes for folks to go watch it. It's extremely powerful. But I want to kind of walk through how that came about for you, and then how you accomplished that. And I was telling you earlier, so at our ministry, we create custom media content for churches. And last year, when COVID was really happening and churches could not meet, virtual choir videos were definitely a huge thing that we got requests to do. And people almost expected, hey, can we have it this Sunday? Hey, can we very quickly? So let's go and tell us, how long did it take you guys to produce the blessing? How long did you think it was going to take? And then how long did it actually take?
Well, I would say it's the most difficult musical project I've ever been involved with, and I've been involved with a few. I very naively at the start of the project, I was thinking, well, about maybe 3 weeks. And understand, this is May 2020, so we're in lockdown. All my work trips have vanished. I can't even really leave my house, you know, unless I'm going to the grocery store. And I'm here with my wife and three young boys, all under 14 years old, 13 at that stage. And I thought, well, I could just really plow into this project. I'm going to get some help. You know, I'm not going to do it on my own. I'm going to involve some professional video editors and mix engineers and like audio people, all that sort of stuff. I think about 3 weeks. It took 3 months. And it was, the team got bigger than I imagined, and it was much more difficult than I imagined. But I really wanted it to be high quality. I'll have to leave it to the people who watch it to judge whether it is high quality or not. But it's as good as I could make it. And that was a really high priority to me. So about 3 months.
Yeah. All right. So let's go back to the beginning. Let's define our terms here. What is a virtual choir video?
Fantastic. Yeah, we should go back to the beginning because you want to know we're on the same page here. The fastest thing you could do if you're watching this is to take one of those links that Carl spoke about and watch one or two of them. Go to YouTube and search virtual choir video. But basically what we're talking about is when you have a lot of people singing a song, they sing the same song, but they're not in the same room together like a choir traditionally would be. They've videoed and audio recorded themselves singing the song as one voice. And then all those different videos have come together to a central producer. Some people call themselves a conductor, and they edit all those together into one vocal performance. These have been around since, well, for over 10 years, there have been virtual choir videos around. But it was really with the pandemic in 2020 that they took off, especially from within the Christian church.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Even if I have a physical choir location with all my musicians or in-house, all of that, would I still want to create a virtual choir video?
Well, you better get a better idea of what you're about to bite off. Maybe what by listening to the rest of this podcast, watching. But yes, there are huge benefits. This is some unexpected things for me. These virtual choir videos can break down barriers. not just geographical barriers. Yes, I can have people all connected with the one church, but there's a level of, how would I put it? There's something magical, I think, that happens when people-
It really is powerful.
Who are different from one another, gather together and work on a project together. If you've got a team of people, even if you're all at the one church, you've got a choir, you've got some instrumentalists, would you do a virtual choir? Well, especially if you've still got some sort of restrictions on your gatherings because of COVID-19 or the next pandemic, whatever that is. But still, it's tough to get all those people in the one room. And having a great project that you can all do together builds unity. And even if that project doesn't have you all in the same room together. So this is the thing that I found from COVID-19 and having to do these virtual choir, my virtual choir video and the others I've observed. You give people a project to do together, like, will you video record yourself singing this song in this key with this tempo? Or will you play this instrumental part for this song? I'll compile the parts together. There's this invisible unity that can happen between us as we do that project. And I think the people who view the end result get a sense of that. They get a sense of this unity that I believe actually is from the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
This oneness that Jesus talks about in John 17:21. Jesus prays that we would all be one as he and his Father in heaven are one. Well, a little bit of that John 21 source flows through a virtual choir video that I think is worth presenting.
Yeah. Well, I think of churches with different with multiple campuses, campuses that are not in the same vicinity. You know, if there's campuses internationally or all over, or missional churches or church plants out of my church. This is a great thing to bring all of your people together and really see the unity of one body, local body, and then the global church as a whole. Just the unity piece alone is pretty incredible.
There's home churches too like that, where there's like we're 12, 24, 3 different home churches, people meeting in living rooms without a physical building, but they are connected to each other in some way.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times people want to work on bringing about unity. And I'm going to hopefully not, but I might misquote Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who tells us, you know, those who want to bring about their version of common unity will destroy it. And I think that's true. If you've got a group of people that you want to bring about more unity amongst them, don't try and bring about unity. Simply find a project that you can all do together. And unity is a happy byproduct. Do this project, do it well, and achieve the goal you set, and unity will happen automatically.
Yeah.
If I want to teach people to be unified, I'll end up trying to just make them agree with me. And that never goes well.
Right.
But hey, we're going to do a virtual choir video project. It's around this song. I'm going to be the central hub of it. Here's the project. Here's the instructions. Let's do this together. Get people excited about that. And unity comes about as a happy byproduct.
So how did the New Zealand Blessing Project come to you?
Well, as I said, I came to New Zealand right before Christmas 2018. And during 2019, I was still trying to find my feet living in New Zealand. I'd been living in the United States for 17 years prior to that. And that's where most of my work had happened as a, you know, doing this more than music mentor work and being a public speaker and a musician. And in fact, 2019, I did 4 trips from New Zealand back to the United States to work. Each of those 4 trips was about 3 weekends in length, speaking at conferences, different churches, things like that. But when COVID-19 hit, of course, all that stopped. And here I am in a little tiny country, New Zealand, with a tiny population and a very small church, at least compared to the United States, wondering, well, what can I do? You know, I love the Christian church. I'm musical. I have abilities. What can I do? And I saw a video called The UK Blessing. And maybe you'll put a link to that one as well, because I wasn't aware of even the song, The Blessing. I saw the UK Blessing and it deeply moved me. It was while we were in lockdown that I first saw it, and I watched it with my wife and my kids, and I watched it a few times. And for those who aren't familiar with it, please check it out. But what I saw there was a bunch of people who were in lockdown in a very, very tough time for the Christian church. In a time when none of them were able to be in the same room singing worshipfully together, they decided to sing together anyway. And they chose a song that was just very clearly expressing God's words of blessing to people. You know, here was a group of people who didn't want to be a bucket to contain blessing. You know, like, oh, I've got a new car, hashtag blessed. You know, I've got a promotion, hashtag blessed. No, they realized that a truly blessed person doesn't just contain a blessing like a bucket. They want to be a portal through which this blessing flows. So that really excited me when I saw the UK blessing. Then I realized that actually it was the Pittsburgh blessing that came out first. A group of people unable to meet together, musically capable, wanted to worship God and decided they'd use the internet to build a virtual choir video around their song, The Blessing. It seemed to be the perfect lyric. The Lord bless you and keep you, make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. It seemed to be a perfect thing to be singing when the world was in such disarray and there was so much fear and unknown. Despite our circumstances, God is still God and he's for us and not against us. This was a great thought to be singing. And it wasn't just Pittsburgh. Then I saw the UK blessing and I realized that, you know, there was a Canadian one. There's one from Hawaii, the one from South Africa. And they started popping up all around the world. I think the last time I looked, there's over 50 really good ones and many more less than great ones that have been done. Or from all around the world. There's an Arab blessing. So the unity was just undeniable. And I thought, well, here I am in New Zealand. I don't really know many people here yet, especially those who are involved in music and the Christian church. I want to know those people. Is anyone making a version of the blessing from New Zealand? Because I really feel like my new home country of New Zealand needs to join this global choir. And so I did a little bit of research, like a bunch of phone calls, bunch of emails, just saying, hey, does anyone know if is anyone making one? And there had been a couple of little efforts made, but no one had really grabbed the whole nation to try and make a really international level one. And so it just fell to me. I thought, all right. And there was a lot of thoughtful prayerfulness around this, but also a big bunch of naivety about how much work it would take. But yeah, I just decided, all right, I really think that my new home country, New Zealand, which is also known as Aotearoa in the First Peoples language, and it's becoming more common to call New Zealand Aotearoa. So if you do a YouTube search, and the link's going to be below, but we called it the Blessing Aotearoa / New Zealand. And that's our effort. But yeah, it really was like, doesn't look like anyone's doing it. All right, I will. That's how it happened.
You did a great job with it, man. Let's walk through some tips on how you accomplished it, because I think that will really help churches to go, you know, maybe worship leaders or others go, we can do that. Even if it's not that grand of a scale, we can do that in our church, or we might can, you know, do something bigger like this one. Yeah. So let's talk about how to make these. So tell me about three things to keep in mind. You talk about cheap, fast, and quality, right, which is my motto when it comes to clients.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of us might have heard this in some business school or from our parents or whatever, but I didn't really think about this heading into this project, but I remembered partway into it. There's really only three things you can get out of a project like this. And this applies to any purchase. Like, you're looking for a used car, if you're looking for a nice shirt, you know, whatever. You can get, there's three things. You can get fast, you can get cheap, or you can get high quality. And the most you can get is two out of three. So you think about fast food, you're getting two out of three, right? If you want to get a nice meal, you're probably going to have to wait for a little while. And you're probably going to have to pay for it. You know, so the project that we got into here, the Blessing Aotearoa, we decided to aim for high quality, and we were relying on a lot of volunteer work from people. No one was getting paid. Not a single soul was getting paid for their work. So it had to take a long time. It took 3 months instead of the 3 weeks. We might have been able to do it in 3 weeks if we'd been willing to spend a lot of money on it.
Right.
But we didn't have the money to spend. We weren't willing to. So yeah, that's the idea there. We decided to get high quality and affordable.
So talk to me about copyright. So a lot of there's a lot of questions on the internet, and especially with streaming involved and things like that, on what do I do about copyright? So tell me how you guys made sure that you were legally covered.
Well, it's a really difficult thing to talk about. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a copyright lawyer or even a music industry lawyer. I'm a musician and a public speaker. So please don't take my word for it, but you'll need to check at the time of you making your project and in your region, because these laws change in different areas around the world. And also it's kind of shifting sand.
Mm-hmm.
But I meaning that what I say right now may not be true in 10 minutes time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we started at Song Select just working out, well, who owns the copyright on the original song and making sure whenever we needed to, we recognized those people. You don't actually have to get permission from the owners of the copyright to do a cover version of their song. At least I satisfied myself that I didn't need to by speaking to a local New Zealand copyright music lawyer here. But to have our cover version generating any sort of money for anyone, even if it's advertisers on YouTube, then you need to... You need to make sure you go to a service like copyright. What did I do? Easy Song Licensing. That's where I went. Yeah. Easy Song Licensing, and make sure you pay the couple of $100. That's what I, from memory, that's what it was for me, to make sure that the owners of the copyright are going to be paid what they need to get paid as that cover version generates any income. Because I don't get it. I didn't write the song, and I mustn't pretend that I have. So you've got to make sure that you're not imagining yourself as the songwriter of someone else's copywritten material. That's not the case with my cover version. I don't own that. So I've got to make sure those people get it. And I went to Easy Song Licensing, and that's a website. Pretty easy.
So another website that you used is multitracks.com, and that's where you pulled your tracks from. So tell me about that, and then tell me how you prepared your document instructions for your singers and musicians.
Oof, okay. So multitracks.com is a pretty amazing service where it's not every sound recording is on there, but it's especially been set up for the Christian church. There's a lot of churches who they want to play songs for their Sunday services, but their bass player isn't up to scratch, or they want to have those extra guitar parts playing or whatever else. So they often go to Multitracks and buy for something like $50 US. You can buy the multi-track. So it's the original artist released a song that you might be hearing on the radio, you might have heard on YouTube or Spotify, and it breaks down all the different parts separately: drums, percussion, bass guitar, keyboards, electric guitars. It won't give you the lead vocal. It'll which you shouldn't need anyway if you're using it as a multi-backing track. You should have a singer there. But I didn't use any of those for my end result. I wanted to have a sound recording that I could send out to my virtual choir members so they had some track to sing to. I've ended up replacing all those with my New Zealand instrumentalists, drummers, bass guitar, and so on. But that backing track gave us a great template for the song. I was able to shift the key, which I didn't want to do it in B, like it came out originally. I wanted to do it in B flat, and multitracks.com allowed me to do that. I then edited the song to be the length that I wanted it to be, chopped out a few bits and pieces, and that's what I was able to use to send out to prospective choir members to say, sing the blessing to this backing track. We'll not be using that backing track on our end product, but that was a great bed for them to sing to. Now, you asked me what my instructions for the singers.
Yeah.
Wow.
And musicians.
I've got to go back now. So I took on the role as being the producer, the central person who was trying to orchestrate all these moving parts. And I had in my mind what sort of vocal video submissions I wanted to get. I wanted to have singers all around New Zealand, or New Zealanders in other places around the world, record themselves singing The Blessing. So I provided for them a backing track, like I just described, for multi-tracks. I also gave them a backing track with a metronome click, like a tempo over the top of it. Then I also gave them one with a guide vocal. I actually had a piano playing a simplified version of the melody, so they could hear that if they wanted to. And we also integrated Te Reo, which is the Maori language. So we, in our version, we had a verse in a different language than English. So I had to get that translation made, had some guide singers sing that, because I don't speak Te Reo. I'm an Australian, you know, so what am I going to do? But I knew it was important that we integrate that. And then so there are all these backing tracks that people could listen to. I also produced PDF documents, which are for those who read notation, they could read the notation. I explained where I wanted harmony to be put in. And then I wrote 3 pages of notes about how to record your voice, how to frame your video and all that. And it turns out that singers don't read 3 pages of notes, Carl. No, I don't think I would have read 3 pages of notes. So I wrote these 3 pages of notes that described all the different things about lighting and about facial expressions and, you know, because you want this sort of continuity. I wanted people expressing the words of the song towards whoever was watching it. I didn't want them in profile singing out to, you know, a scene over there. So there were all these. So if you're making one of these, you've got to have your instructions in mind. You've got to think it through and realize that people are different all around the place. You know, like they're going to read your instructions, hopefully, and if you don't guide them, they're going to mess it up.
How would you do that? How would you do it differently instead of writing 3 pages? Just a short.
I really think I should have made a video. Mm. People watch videos, but they don't read notes. So I should have said, "Hi, I'm Grant Norsworthy." I would have said Grant Norsworthy for New Zealanders, you know, but
with the emphasis on the R, right? Norse, right?
Yeah. North yeah, well, well, it's also in New Zealand they say Grant, whereas Americans say Grant, right?
That's true. That's true.
Anyway,
we digress.
So I would have made a video saying, "Hey, I'm so glad you want to be in this virtual choir video. This is the sort of video I'd like you to make. You know, when you're singing, make sure your head is in this position. Make sure you blah blah blah." And I would have made a video for them to watch about it rather than have them read 3 pages of notes.
Yeah,
I think that would have made it better. However, it all worked, right? Like you've seen the end result. It worked. You know, I wanted only individual singers, no groups of singers in my virtual choir video. But we ended up with a few groups, and it didn't break it. It just made it more interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
And I wanted people to sing a very specific version of the melody, because, you know, "The Lord bless you, and the Lord bless you, and the Lord bless you." They're all different. And when you're in the same room with a choir singing together, you hear people next to you singing it a particular way, even if you can't read the notation, and you end up singing it the same way as each other, and the conductor should point it out if you're doing it differently. But I ended up with, you know, voices of 200 soloists trying to make that into a virtual choir. So if you listen carefully, there's a lot of little variations in the way people sing stuff, but we ended up embracing that mess, and I don't regret it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it would have been better if I made it a demonstration video rather than writing a whole bunch of notes.
So, and we'll kind of zip through the post-production portion of this pretty quickly, but, and I don't know how much of this you want to admit, but to that end, there were some folks that you saw, but didn't necessarily hear. You were maybe committed to seeing everybody, but some of the voices might not have meshed together the right way. Would that be accurate?
Yeah. So with our project, and I was hoping for maybe 30, 40, 50 vocal submissions. I felt like I could make a little New Zealand Aotearoa choir out of that, but we ended up getting about 200 people involved. I haven't done the final count, but that's a lot of voices. And that's one of the main reasons why the project took 3 months rather than 3 weeks. But as you can imagine, like, I'm the overall producer. We're getting some vocal submissions from people who just flat out can't sing, you know, they can't sing, but I love the passion and I love the effort.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to make sure we found ways of using their faces without necessarily using their voices. And then there were some people who perhaps could sing really well, but they decided to record their video and their voice on a beach, a surf beach that's really loud, you know, and so the ocean is louder than their voice almost. One of my favorite little videos is from four guys who are actually a classical vocal group called The Shades.
Yeah.
And
they're very islander looking.
Yeah, yeah. So they're two of them are Tongan, two of them are Samoan. They all live in New Zealand. But you know, there was all sorts of stuff going on with our audio. And so for example, they're amazing singers, but there was a smoke detector with a dead battery in the room with them. So the oh man, you know. So this is so anyway. We were committed to using every face, but no, we didn't use every voice. So I went through all the videos, and my wife had to help me out with this because it was just got overwhelming. And we actually categorized, all right, these 20 voices, we call them Choir A. And I sent them off to an audio editor and said, edit those 20 voices together as one choir. So I've got one stereo track of audio that is those 20 voices. Then I chose Choir B, another 20 voices. Choir C, another 20 voices. And then on top of that, we had hero voices that we'll talk about in a moment. But I ultimately ended up with probably up to 9 hero voices, solo voices that I could lay in. And gradually, as the choir builds in its dynamic, as the song gets bigger and louder, I can bring in Choir A. And at that point, Choir A and B. And that point, Choir A, B, and C. And then that's 69 voices, roughly.
Right.
Then all the other people are just faces. Because I believe that after 9 voices, especially watching YouTube, you're watching a YouTube video, after 9 voices, you're no longer needing to match faces with the sound that you're hearing.
Right.
So, yeah, that's maybe leading the cat out of the bag. I hope it's not popping the, you know, the purest bubble for anybody. But, no, it would have been impossible for us to use every vocal audio that we received. Yeah. We used every face.
So you mentioned hero voices. Talk to me about you chose a few that were your core.
Right. So then for those who are familiar with the song, you'll know that it starts really quite small. And almost all the Blessing videos match, I guess, the template set up for us by those early virtual choir videos, which is maybe one voice starts and then there's 2 voices and then there's 3 and it slowly builds. And then it drops for the bridge and comes back to just one voice, perhaps. At least that's how we did it. And it's only towards the end where we're getting this flood of faces over the screen,
right,
and the sound of a lot of voices. So it was really important. So I'm not talking about people who are heroes. It's very much a hero audio video of that person, if that makes sense. So I'm looking for a great vocal performance when I'm listening to the vocal submission and watching it. I'm hoping that it looks good, that it's well lit, and I could lean on it on its own or lean on that video with only a small number of other videos. They're my heroes. Often those singers ended up being people who are professionals or semi-professionals or aspiring professionals. It can often depend on them having a higher quality mic like this. Right. They've maybe got a home studio. There's no background noise. They've got some lights like you've probably got some good lights on you because you do a lot of video.
Mm-hmm.
So those grainy, dark videos that are badly framed, you know, and recorded through a phone's microphone, they tended to end up being not heroes.
Right.
There had to be that small number that we could lean on. I think it's probably, before we move too far from it, I wanted to mention that I needed to very quickly be able to align all the videos in time. So you imagine an individual recording their video. They push record on their camera or their phone or whatever the device they're using to record themselves. and then they're listening through headphones to our backing track. I asked them to use in-ears if they could, but some of them are wearing cans, which is also fine. But I didn't want the sound of the backing track in their vocal performance. I wanted just their voice.
Right.
But to be able to synchronize those, make them in the same space in time, I put on my backing track, give me a synchronized hand clap in 4, 3, 2, 1, clap. And I wanted everyone to clap right on the when I said clap. But like I said, I should have made an instructional video. I got lots of this. Give me a synchronized hand clap in 4, 3, 2, 1, clap. You're like, so I should have made it more clear. I really want you to clap really precisely when I say the word clap. That'll help us synchronize this. That would have saved us maybe about 5 days if we'd done that better.
Yep. Good point. All right. So after putting this together, and this sounds self-serving if I say it, but it might not with you saying it. Why should you use professional audio, professional video guys to work on a project like this?
Well, it really depends on the standard you're shooting for. You know, if you've decided to go for cheap and fast, or maybe just cheap, then do that. You know, there are some virtual choir videos out there that don't sound very good and don't look very good. And it's not wrong that they're out there. Those people are expressing themselves. But if you really want to make an impact, if you want to try and get the 600,000 views or the 2 million views or the whatever, because you've made a piece of art that really stacks up, then you just have to involve professionals. And professional doesn't necessarily mean the person's getting money from it, at least in this context. I think it needs to be people who can produce really high quality, because the audio side of this and the video editing side of this get very, very complicated, very difficult. They require a level of workmanship that is not common. And now, I didn't do hardly any of the audio engineering work. I didn't do hardly any of the video editing work, but I did oversee the project. And it was like, I realized at the start of the project, I needed to separate the audio and the video, and I had to be looking over both of them. And I had professionals on both sides, 3 different professional video editors, 4 different professional audio engineers, and I brought it all together. And I was communicating between them about, no, we need to shift the frame of that video, needs to shift 4 back. No, this audio needs to be a little higher in the mix, you know, bring it together like that. And that required professionals on both sides.
Yeah. So as we close today, tell me some of the takeaways from this project. Was it, obviously it was harder than you might've first expected. And what are some ways that it moved you, that you were proud of it?
Well, I can honestly say it was, you know, one of the hardest things I've ever done creatively, musically, but also the most rewarding. You know, I've been involved in some bands in the past, some albums, some songs that have been on the radio. But the sort of response we've got to the Blessing Aotearoa YouTube video that's also on Facebook has been overwhelmingly positive. For me, there's several things. One is, as an Australian in New Zealand, I knew I needed to integrate Māori culture into this video. In fact, for me, the way we start the video with a karanga, it's a word I didn't even know before the project, and finish it with a karakia, which is a Māori prayer at the end, and the karanga is like a welcome that recognizes God. And to have that verse 3 in Te Reo, that was, look, if I knew we needed to have Māori in the video, but I had to own my own ignorance about the culture. And I had to learn. I had to go to people who were leaders in the Māori culture and say, if you don't help me, I'm going to hang your culture on this video like a cheap bauble on a plastic Christmas tree. But I'm ignorant. I'm an Australian. I want you guys involved. But I'm going to mess it up unless you help me.
Yeah.
And that's probably the biggest learning thing for me as an Australian in my new home of New Zealand. And I would say that the only thing that makes the Blessing Aotearoa video different from the others is the integration of Māori culture.
Yeah.
It's the people. And the strongest thing about it for me, I did not chase church unity project. I just invited anyone and everyone. I didn't ask people about their theology or how they voted on that issue or which party didn't. That wasn't what I was about. I wanted people to sing God's words of blessing together. And we've ended up with a picture of old people, young people, cool people, uncool people, brown people, white people, Catholic people, Protestant people, you know, really Pentecostal people, very ecumenical people, all together singing the same song, same words. And it turns out to be a very powerful picture of the way we want our church to be.
Yeah.
As one, as Jesus prays that we would be one. So yeah, I think it's a good song. We got some good vocal performances. I think we arranged it well, recorded it well, edited it well. But ultimately, I think there's something of God flowing through the project that I can't take credit for.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to, but for some reason, and I think it's partly at least because we have set aside our differences and sung God together. We wanted to be a pipe for God's blessing, not a bucket for God's blessing. And we just want to be used by God to bring about more of his kingdom here on earth.
Yeah.
And that's the message, and that's why it's good.
Yeah.
That's
it. It came through. Awesome. Well, man, thank you so much for your time. What's next for you? How can we be thinking about you and keeping up with you?
Well, there's two websites, grantnorsworthy.com. And within that website, there's more than musicmentor.com. I love to be helping your team of singers, instrumentalists, and technicians understand more fully the value, the importance of music in the life of the Christian church, how to use it more effectively, how to get a congregation singing these songs as an expression of worship more passionately, better. That can be done online or in person. Please chase me about that. I love to speak to the whole church as well about what it means to worship God, what it means to be a blessing, a number of different topics. But I'd love people to contact me through my website. And there's just info@grantnorsworthy.com is the email address. Don't be put off by the fact that I'm in New Zealand. Carl's not in New Zealand. He's in the United States and we're communicating, no trouble.
Yeah.
And I'm here to help. I'm here to serve. Yeah. And I'd love people to reach out to me.
Well, man, it's been a pleasure meeting you and talking with you. I'm so glad that we got connected. And we'll close on this. So I'm so glad that you built your entire studio with the wood panels for this interview so that we can match. I really appreciate that. Thanks for your time, man. Really appreciate it.
No worries, Kyle.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about a really cool conference that I'll be a part of in a few weeks. It's called the Capture Summit. It's for church filmmakers and content creators. It's August 3rd and 4th in Raleigh, North Carolina. And speakers include filmmakers Eric Bramlett, Josh Etheridge, Laura Tapp, Jesse Henning, my friend Brian Blackmore from Church Production Magazine, and more. You can register at CaptureSummit.com. Be sure to get there if you can. If not, be sure to catch the live stream. Again, the website CaptureSummit.com. Here's a quick video with more details. If you're listening to the audio of this podcast, be sure to go to MakingSundayHappen.com to watch the video and learn more, or register at CaptureSummit.com. Check this out. Hey guys, one way you can show your volunteers their service to your team and your church matters is to celebrate numbers. Every number is a person, and that person matters to God. If your vision or your goal is to see salvation and spiritual growth from the experiences you create as a team, why not share measurable results with them? Share salvation numbers, baptism numbers, care responses. How many people signed up for a small group or Bible study? These are the things that you're after. Celebrate with your team how these things are happening in your church and through your worship experiences.
The show notes for this episode are available now at makingsundayhappen.com.
Hey guys, thanks so much for checking out the show this week. Next week on the podcast, I'll welcome Brad Zimmerman. Brad serves at Watermark Church in Michigan. We're going to be talking to Brad about how to master your live stream. So how to take your live stream and your online worship experiences up a notch. So we'll spend 2 weeks with Brad talking about live stream and online church and all of that kind of stuff. You might know Brad as the face of ProPresenter tutorial videos that are online through Renewed Vision. So you might have seen his face through that. I'll be chatting with Brad for the next 2 weeks all about your live stream. So be sure to check that out. Also, in the weeks to come, I will be welcoming to the show Carrie Newhoff, author, speaker, pastor. You know him from the internets. And also Gabe Lyons, the founder of Q, will be on the show. We'll be talking about what's next for the church. So kind of a temperature set of where we are and where we're going as a church, what to look for in the future. So all that will be coming to the show with Carrie and Gabe in about 3 weeks. So be sure to check that out. We are on a mission to help churches and ministries make Sunday happen well through our ready-made media content, custom graphics and video, as well as training. We want to help you up your game when it comes to reaching people through your weekend worship experiences. Be sure to visit our website, 1230.media, for more. Or you can check out makingsundayhappen.com to get show notes, archive episodes, over 300 free podcast episodes there on the site for you, plus access to over 600 articles on every aspect of your worship experience, from worship to pastoring and teaching, production, communications, leadership, and more, all at makingsundayhappen.com. Well, thank you guys so much for hanging out. Go out there and create some incredible worship experiences this weekend. I'll catch you next week.
Making Sunday Happen is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media. For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your church, visit makingsundayhappen.com.